You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here, taking you around the American League East for MLB.com Extras. The Baltimore Orioles continue to play great baseball towards the top of the division, and things got ugly a little bit at Camden Yards on Tuesday night. A benches-clearing brawl against the Kansas City Royals. So let's kick things off with our MLB.com Orioles reporter, Brittany Giroli. Brittany, a fun series for the Orioles against the Royals right now. A melee on Tuesday night as the Orioles took their second straight in the series from the Royals. It all got started in the second inning. I guess Manny Machado gets thrown on inside by Yordano Ventura a couple of times. Machado hits one deep to left, didn't get out, stayed in the park. Then they had some words, and then next at bat, Ventura hits Machado, and then that was it. Bench is clear, Machado's out, pitch is thrown. I'm sure maybe suspensions to come. It was certainly a wild one, and it seemed like a situation where after the game, the Orioles were certainly rallying around Machado as the guy that was in the right in this situation.
Yes, yeah. I think that they all pretty much agreed that was run 99 trying to hit a guy, trying to hurt a guy. And that can end a guy's career. Manny said it last night. A couple of the other guys said it. It's really unfortunate, but you look at Ventura, this isn't the first time. Hopefully the league takes a look at it and really tries to put a stop to it, because if you think about it, Tim, I'm not saying that Machado was totally blameless, because, you know, he was chirping in that at bat before and then Ventura back and forth. But you go up there as a batter, you have no weapons. If you're a pitcher, you have a 99-mile-an-hour pitch that you can really hurt a guy with. So I think Machado had to kind of stand up for himself there before things escalated. And it's unfortunate that it even got to that point.
Yeah, and you mentioned 99 miles per hour, and that was Ventura's hardest pitch of the night, which doesn't help, I think, in as far as the world of public opinion or anything like that, because you think a lot of times about when a pitcher goes out and hits a guy, he maybe takes a little off if it's a message-sending thing, and for Ventura to really dial it up to 99, not good. As far as possible suspensions, that kind of thing, any idea? I mean, I know baseball – usually the time frame can differ from event to event, but any thoughts on when we may be hearing about that?
No, I really don't know. Last night, obviously, people were talking about it, but it was so early, you were still digesting what had happened. I'd be surprised if you heard today. I think usually if you look at it, MLB takes about a day or two. So I don't know. I don't know what they're going to end up doing. I know the Orioles will be upset if Manny ends up getting more or the same as Ventura. They thought he was provoked.
Yeah, in that situation, I would think it could end up being the same, especially when you're thinking about Ventura being a starting pitcher. I feel like starting pitchers usually get a little bit longer suspension because obviously they only play every fifth day. But it'll be interesting to see. And they always say the best way to get revenge is to do it on the field, right? And so the Orioles, right after the bench is clear, everybody goes back to the dugouts, and the Orioles go back-to-back homers. I mean, there's no better way to get back at a team.
There isn't, and I think Bunk kind of mentioned it a little bit yesterday, the fact that, you know, this dates back a while. The Royals embarrassed the Orioles in 2014 in the postseason. They swept them. And there was a lot of stuff that happened that the Orioles weren't too fond of. They thought that the Royals were a little rude in certain aspects of the game, and, you know, they just took it. And last night, they didn't feel like taking it any longer, and that's what you saw. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this whole thing kind of comes down over the next few days.
Yeah, and certainly there's another game to be played in this series. Do you see any situation where last night or Tuesday night bleeds into Wednesday's game?
I don't know. You'd like to hope not. You would think that maybe they would get over it in baseball and realize that this whole thing is silly. But, again, it wouldn't surprise me. Really wouldn't. I think if you're Kansas City, you got to focus first and foremost on winning a game. They've lost six in a row. I thought that was probably one of the more disappointing things, and you could tell – some of the Royals guys seemed frustrated, and if you watch the video, Perez is really slow behind the plate to come at Manny. He basically let Manny charge the mound, and Ned Yost did it. That some of the guys on the Royals are tired of Ventura's antics, and the team's losing. They're in the middle of a bad losing stretch, and Ventura's worried about a personal vendetta with Manny. So I don't know if it's going to carry over or not. You would hope not. You would think not, especially if the Royals are a little fed up with Ventura.
Yeah, it's not the first time for Ventura. He's got a kind of a reputation at this point. He's been involved in this stuff before. All right, let's get away from that and back to the Orioles as a team. Yovani Gallardo, second rehab start on Tuesday afternoon. That at the AAA level. How close is he?
Close. I'd be surprised if he doesn't come back. He's going to go with the team to throw his first day, so he'll probably decide, I guess, after that. But, again, I think he's probably going to end up. I don't know why you bring him to Toronto and then send him back out for another rehab start as long as he's healthy. So
yeah, that doesn't seem
I think
to...
that's going to end soon, I would think.
Brian, it's draft week in Major League Baseball, so a little bit later in the podcast, we'll check in on that and kind of the Yankees' philosophy and that sort of thing as they head into yet another Major League Baseball draft. But let's start with the team currently on the field, injuries and all, but a team that's off to a good start in their series, obviously winning two games Monday, Tuesday, and getting a nice start from Michael Pineda on Tuesday night. And that's something this team desperately needed. Seven innings, three earned runs. Really, he had one bad inning where he gave up the three runs. Other than that, it's solid all around. It's a quality start. And it seems like a mechanical change has really made a difference, right, for that slider?
Absolutely. And that could be really big for the Yankees if Michael Pineda has really figured out what was wrong early in the season. And this is now two back-to-back good starts, and he was saying that he and pitching coach Larry Rothschild have kind of made a tweak with the arm angle, and that's giving him more action on the slider, more action on his fastball, and the Yankees need it. Pineda was very much on the verge of being demoted to the minors. A lot of people were talking about that he might be better served to go down to AAA and try and figure it out there. It's obviously hard to make those kind of adjustments at the big league level, but the last two starts are evidence that he may be turning it around, and if so, that's huge for the Yankees because they really do need him to be what they thought he was going to be.
Would he have not survived to this point if the Yankees had a better option down in AAA to be able to call up?
Yeah, you wonder about that. You wonder if Luis Severino had been what they thought he was going to be, if he had not gotten hurt, if they had somebody ready to come up. I think they probably would have made that move, but you saw the Yankees experiment a little bit. You saw guys like Luis Sessa and Chad Green come up. I think given the options that they had, they figured it was better to stick with Michael Pineda and see if he could figure it out. The upside is clearly much more. And look, that was pretty impressive what he did against the Angels. Yeah, there was the one pitch to Cole Calhoun that he left up, and he was upset about that. But other than that, you look at his outing, and particularly the first inning is 1-2-3, including a strikeout of Mike Trout. You're going to take that all day from Michael Pineda, and obviously the first inning has been a big problem for him. He's figuring everything out. Clearly the Yankees are encouraged, and that would be big for them.
Survives to fight another day. Obviously one start, or maybe you could say two decent starts in a row, does not make a complete return to what he was. So I guess questions are still there. What does he say about building off this into the next go-around?
No, I mean, he's got to keep it rolling. I think that you keep looking back to that Mother's Day start last year where he struck out 16, and you're thinking, well, that is the absolute what Michael Pineda can be, and that hasn't exactly been the norm. The norm has been more kind of up and down, intermittent flashes of brilliance, followed by some inconsistency, and a lot of what we saw earlier in the year, honestly, has been most of what Michael Pineda has been as a Yankee. He tantalizes you with that talent, and when he's on, he is awesome. They need to consider that, and they need to get that to be more consistent. So he's back-to-back good ones, and if he can make it three in a row, then all the better for the Yankees.
Carlos Beltran reached another milestone on Tuesday night, his 1,000th career extra base hit. And he's the seventh player in Major League Baseball history to have 1,000 extra base hits, 1,000 walks, and 300 stolen bases, which is, to a degree, a random collection of numbers. But still, if you're the seventh player ever to do anything, it's impressive. And it's one more, I guess, notch, Brian, in the argument that Carlos Beltran is going to be a Hall of Famer when it's all said and done.
Yeah, absolutely. And Beltran was saying he thinks the triples in his career early in his career in Kansas City, that time of probably helped him get there, and he's probably right. But this is a guy who's hit for power. You're right. He's stolen bases. He's pretty much done it all. He was an upper echelon center fielder. I think that you look at the era in which he played, and who is better than him in center field? Maybe Ken Griffey Jr. All right, fine. You want to go there? Who is better? So Beltran, I'm fine with putting him too, right in that generation. He's one of the best players in his time, and I think we are looking at a Hall of Famer. I don't know. We'll see if it's going to be first ballot or not. I think he's still got a little bit left in the tank, and that's the amazing thing that we're seeing here. This guy's 39 going on 40, and I don't think by any means he's done yet. He's not the same player he used to be. His defense is a step below, if more than that. Speed's not a real big part of his game anymore. He's not the same player, but he's been one of the best players and one of the most consistent players on this Yankee team this year, and I don't know where they'd be without him.
Bill, the Rays surging a little bit. As we record the podcast, they've won four in a row after topping the D-backs on Monday, and three of four in the series before that. That said, they had fallen off the pace a little bit in the American League East. So this was much needed and just in time. What's been different these last four games? What's going right for this team? I know Chris Archer had 12 strikeouts on Monday night, a good sign for him. What do you like about this team over the last week?
Well, the hitting is hard not to like right now. I mean, Morrison and Longoria have been, you know, really putting on a power show. And, you know, I know a lot of Rays fans were frustrated with Morrison in the early going, but he has really turned it on now. And then Longoria, he told me the other day that he's made a little alteration in his stance, and it feels really good, and it's probably the best he's felt in 2 years.
Yeah, and Evan Longoria named American League Player of the Week. Seventh time in his career he's gotten that. But for the week, that was last week, 13-28, 464, nine-game hitting streak. He had eight extra base hits in those seven games and nine RBIs. What exactly was the adjustment?
Well, from my understanding, it was kind of he opened up a little bit, opened up his stance a little bit, and he's seeing the ball a little better. And, you know, he said at first it was kind of hard or a struggle because, you know, he'd done it the other way for so long. But once he started getting some good results, he feels pretty comfortable with it.
I mentioned Archer and improves to 4-7 on the season, which is obviously disappointing for him so far. He did allow three earned over six innings. I know he'd like to go further into a game, but part of that is the strikeouts. If you're going to strike out 12 guys, it's going to take some extra pitches. That was a season-high 12 strikeouts. Is that a good sign for Archer when he's striking guys out? Does it mean he's coming around?
You know, I mean, I think the way his season's gone, you have to look at anything positive as being a positive. So, you know, he has struggled, you know, for whatever reason, even though he likes to say it's just a process and, you know, he's not as results, you know, he's not as much in tune to the results as he is the process. You know, the results do matter. So I think he got some good results last night. So I think that's got to be perceived as a positive.
One thing that's been consistent through this four-game win streak, Bill, has been Colome closing out all four games. And I think Kevin Cash made a joke that he was going to make sure Colome wasn't even in the ballpark on Tuesday so he couldn't use him. But you never want to go to your closer that many times. But Colome this season just every night seems to rise to the occasion.
And of course the start of that streak he had like 5 days off before
right.
That and he was kind of rusty, so I mean I believe it was a five out or maybe even a six out save the first one, but it was a little bit, you know, a little bit rough, but he wanted to get back out there the next night and, you know, with the rust knocked off, and he's pretty tough.
So let's check in on the team who's been playing great baseball. We'll take away Monday night and the loss to the Tigers, but overall, after Sunday, they were within 2.5 games of first place over the last 2 weeks, 5 of 6 from the Yankees, 4 of 6 from the Red Sox. That's good baseball within the division. What seems to be coming together for the Blue Jays right now?
Well, a little bit of everything. They're still getting the strong starting pitching, which has kind of led this team surprisingly so all season long. So perhaps it should stop being a bit of a surprise, but they've been getting that continued production. The offense has picked it up just enough. Still not quite the type of numbers that you would expect, you know, after last season. But they're doing a little bit of a better job of coming through in timely situations. It seems like they're making the most of their opportunities, whereas before they were really struggling with runners in scoring position. They were really struggling adding in those insurance runs, and that kind of manifested itself into a lot of issues with the bullpen. So over the last couple of weeks, they've really turned a lot of those things around, and it couldn't have happened at a better time for this team because, you know, that two-week stretch that you were referring to, I mean, that was really a dangerous possibility that the team could get buried a little bit in the standings. But you look at that when they took three of four from Minnesota in the middle of May, that kind of was the start of the turnaround a little bit, and then all the games against the American League East to close within 2.5 games of first place compared to where they were middle of May. It's pretty impressive. Five straight series victories. That's exactly what this team needed to do.
Now, Monday night's game, a little bit of an outlier because the defense lets the team down a little bit, and that's usually a strong strength for the Blue Jays. But Jay Happ also struggled, suddenly a little bit inconsistent after being so dominant early, but five innings pitched, six earned runs on Monday night. What's up with Happ? Is it just going deeper into the season now and things evening off a little bit? Did the defense get to him a little bit?
I think it was a little bit of everything. I think he's been pitching probably above his head a little bit so far this season and in the second half of last year. I mean, Jay Happ is a quality pitcher, but he's not someone who's going to finish the year with an ERA around 2.3. I mean, that's not what really the organization expected from him by any means at all. You know, just talking to him after that really rough start on Monday night, he thought he was still executing the way he did previously. You know, he referenced a couple of really tough pitches that actually went where he wanted them to that were sent over the wall. One of them was from McCann on a three-run shot early in the game, and that did come after one of the defensive miscues that you're referring to when Kevin Pillar misread a fly ball to center field. That's not something he does a lot. It was overall just a game the Blue Jays would like to forget. I mean, there was a lot of mental mistakes. It was a really kind of sloppy game. It's one of those ones that you probably try to turn the page on as quickly as you possibly can and move on. But I think Jay Happ will be fine in the end. He's going to have some of these starts from time to time. But for the most part, I mean, this is still a guy who's been relatively consistent for the Blue Jays. 10 to 12, I believe, have been quality starts. You're going to have those outings from time to time. And for him, he just needs to get back on track in the next one and continue producing the way he's been doing for most of the year.
Yeah, and some nights you just got to tip your cap to the batters for doing a good job. Speaking of starting pitchers, though, how about Estrada? A no-hitter into the eighth on Sunday, and I know they almost ended up losing that game, but they hang on and win it. But Marco Estrada, he's had so many near no-hitters. What is it about him that on random days he's simply unhittable?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, to look back at what he did last year, I think he was top three in opponent's batting average. This year, he's been leading the American League in opponent's batting average. He just doesn't give up very many hits. This is eight starts in a row now where he has allowed five hits or less, and it's something he did last year as well. So, I mean, it's something he's been doing time and time again, and he's just one of those, if you're an opposing hitter, I think he's a very frustrating guy to face, because I think a lot of times hitters go back to the dugout thinking that they should have done an awful lot more with the at-bat than they did, but as cliche as this might sound, he just knows how to pitch. He doesn't have the best stuff. He typically sits upper 80s, around 90 miles per hour on his fastball. But what he does is disguise his pitches really, really well. The changeup is obviously a really plus pitch for him, and I think hitters have a really tough time picking the ball up out of his hand, knowing whether it's going to be one of his off-speed pitches or the fastball. And that when stuff like that goes on, it makes that 90 mile per hour fastball start looking like 95, 96, because they don't know what to expect. And the amount of weak pop-ups that he gets is really kind of astounding. And he's a guy that it really is very difficult to kind of square up if you're an opposing hitter. And the overall consistency that he's had now for the last 2 years has been nothing short of astounding. And he really has been the Blue Jays' number one starter now for a long time. And you can make the case that he was the number one starter last year going into the playoffs as well. Despite the presence of Marcus Stroman and David Price, he was the guy who really led the Blue Jays in the postseason with strong outings against the Rangers and the Royals. He's kind of developed into that number one guy, even though people don't really think of Marco Estrada as a number one starter.
Ian, the Red Sox out west, obviously, briefly in San Francisco. It's just a two-game series, which seems odd to go all the way out to San Francisco for just two, but that's the case. It's interleague play, obviously, which has certain effects on this Red Sox team, and one of the big ones, obviously, is David Ortiz, who's having such a great season, but suddenly he becomes a pinch hitter for this team in a National League ballpark. Now, the good news is he was successful as a pinch hitter on Tuesday night. He was able to come in the seventh inning, close game, get a run in, albeit on a ground out. But it hurts to not have Ortiz, obviously, from first pitch. But on the other hand, it's nice to have a guy like that that you can go to whenever you want to late in a game.
Yeah, I mean, in past years, they've always played David Ortiz at first base during interleague series, at least for one or two games, maybe not the whole series. But, you know, there's a reason this guy is retiring. His his legs and his feet, you know, they're not in great shape here. So they're just trying to piece it together. So he's just kind of hitting his way through his last season, but it's kind of painful to watch him run, and they just don't think that right now playing first would be conducive to David. Maybe later in the year, you know, hopefully they get to the World Series. I'm sure if they can get that far, he'd find a way to play first base then. But, yeah, right now it just kind of is what it is, and this is the way you're going to see it for a while.
For all those people that say, oh, he's not going to retire, look at the seasons he's having. He's certainly going to change his mind. Well, this kind of a sign, right, that this is indeed the last go-around for David Ortiz.
Yeah, I mean, every time he runs it, it's a sign of, you know, why he's retiring. And that's kind of what it makes it amazing, how well he's hitting the ball. It's just, you know, his legs are in great shape right now.
The updates have come out as far as All-Star voting goes, and Red Sox doing well in the All-Star voting. Obviously, that happens when you're winning baseball games. But young players seem to be finally getting noticed as far as the league and the voting goes. Obviously, David Ortiz leading the way for designated hitters in the American League. That's a no-brainer. But Jackie Bradley Jr. breaks into the top three as far as outfielders go. And Xander Bogaerts leading the way at shortstop, which I think going into the season you wouldn't have guessed with all the other young, talented shortstops in baseball. But people are taking notice of these young Red Sox guys.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. And I think people are really starting, especially Red Sox fans, are really starting to like this team. And they have players they feel that they can root for, and players that are very excited to watch. We saw two really long hitting streaks by both Bradley and Bogaerts that was, you know, really enjoyable for the fans to sort of follow for a few weeks there. So, yeah, it's nice to have the excitement back with the Red Sox. When you look at the fact last year, their only starter in the All-Star game, or their only player in the All-Star game last year, was a guy who didn't even play every day in Brock Holt. I thought Bogaerts actually should have made the team last year. But, yeah, it's a huge difference from last year where you're just trying to find anyone from the Red Sox who deserves to be on the team. And now, you know, you have anywhere from five to six guys who really deserve to be on the team.
Yeah, and right now, if the voting ended, they'd have three starters, which would be pretty impressive, especially with two of them as young as they are. And the hitting streaks continue. David Ortiz now on well, I guess his hitting streak ends, though, with the ground out last
night.
Yeah,
it's kind of a tough way for it to end.
Yeah. But he's Chris Young has one going, although he doesn't play every day. It's good stuff from this team. All right, so the series continues on Wednesday night, and what a great matchup it is. David Price, Madison Bumgarner, two of the best lefties in the game, and also two guys that seem to be in top form right now. And David Price, last five starts, seems like the David Price that the Red Sox went out and signed in the offseason. And I don't want to give you too much praise here, Ian, but you did predict a slow start for David Price, and then he would get things going a little bit later. Maybe not because of the mechanical issues, but I got to give you credit for it. But he has been tremendous lately.
Yeah, I just feel like, you know, guys go to these markets, and inevitably, you know, it's human nature to sort of just try too hard to impress your teammates and to show fans, you know, why they spent all this money on you. And it just happens numerous cases, Tim, to guys who sign with Boston or New York, those two cities. Seen it a million times over the last few years. And David, to me, the one thing I stuck out about David was he wasn't the type of guy who was going to get swallowed up by it. He was the guy who was going to have a little hiccup at first and then, you know, figure out that it was a mechanical thing. And I think it had, you know, something to do with adjusting to the market also, even though he doesn't admit that. I think it is an adjustment. And now I don't even think he's pitched as well as he can pitch yet. I still think he's going to start to pitch better. And, you know, what better way than tonight to go against Madison Bumgarner? So I think that you might really see David Price click going forward here.
Certainly AT&T Park, a nice place to pitch as far as a huge ballpark and plenty of room. A little bit different for a left-hander than pitching at Fenway, so he'll be able to take advantage of that as well. Eduardo Rodriguez is back, obviously a couple starts in. How has he looked in your mind so far, Ian?
Well, he looked really good in Baltimore. Then this last time out, he was just, for whatever reason, Sam, he didn't trust his secondary stuff, and it was just way too fastball happy. And against the Toronto team like that, if you're just going to try to beat them with one pitch, they have too many hitters in that lineup to beat you. And that's exactly what happened. He gave up only four hits in the game. All four of them were home runs. But, yeah, I think Eduardo's going to be fine. He's still feeling his way back. It's been a tough go for him having to deal with that knee injury for so long. He's just now regaining confidence in the knee. So I think he'll be pretty good, but just has to make sure to trust his other pitches, which he didn't do last time.